There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
It is Wednesday, March 20th. It's been a while since we checked in on what's going on in the world of television news and the big TV news anchors. Weirdly, maybe it's a sign of the times, the biggest story is probably what's going on with the anchors who left the big news outlets. This Don Lemon, Elon Musk thing is pretty amusing if you haven't followed it. Lemon is the former CNN primetime anchor who was first demoted to the morning show and then fired by the Warner Discovery regime. He agreed to do a news interview show for X, the former Twitter. And he was going to launch it with an interview with the owner, Elon Musk. So Don does the interview. Elon doesn't like being asked actual questions by an actual journalist. So he texts Jay Suris, Lemon's agent, and he says, contract is canceled. Fantastic stuff. It's almost like Elon bought Twitter to promote himself and his ideologies and not, as he said, to protect free speech. Regardless, now Lemon is doing the show anyways, just not exclusive to X. And while I'd argue he's got a pretty strong case against Elon to get paid what he was promised, who wants to sue the world's richest man? Not Craig, not me. Lemon is not alone. Tucker Carlson, the former Fox News primetime anchor who ended up becoming a sacrificial lamb of sorts in the $800 million Dominion defamation settlement. He also went to X to launch the Tucker Carlson Network, his own business. Megyn Kelly, another ex-Fox star, she launched a popular podcast with SiriusXM. Jim Rome, the sportscaster, also took his video show to X after CBS. Obviously, these broadcast stars lose a certain amount of cachet and relevance when they lose their TV perches. You and I might not watch TV news, but there's still a few million people that watch this stuff every night, and they're very profitable, though the median age of the CNN, Fox, and MSNBC audience is, respectively, 67, 68, and 71 years old. That means half the people who watch MSNBC are over 71. Having said that, do these anchors really lose that much relevance if they're not on cable TV news? How much does that perch even matter anymore? We know where most people get their news these days, and it's not CNN. These anchors are showing that increasingly they can build a business and make a decent, if not the 7-8-figure salaries that they were making on the TV platform. That's what we're getting into today with Dylan Byers. Dylan covers the news media for Puck, where I work, and he's written extensively about the weird state of cable news, the Don Lemon dust-up, all these anchors scrambling amid the decline of the medium. Today, it's the business of life after news stardom. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Dylan Byers of Puck, where I work. He covers the cable news universe, all the news media in general. Welcome, Dylan.
Thank you for having me, Matt. It's a real pleasure.
All right, so let's dive right into this. I don't know who to root for here. Don Lemon versus Elon Musk. I mean, whose side do you pick in this? I mean, I guess I pick Don Lemon. He's always been nice to me at parties. And you got to feel bad for the guy. He gets fired from CNN and tries to remake himself at Twitter X and thinks he has a deal with Elon Musk to do his show and get paid a bunch of money. And then he does an actual interview with some journalistically sound questions about Elon's erratic behavior and the future of X and all these things that people do care about. And Elon doesn't seem to want that on X. Mr. Free Speech, what's going on here?
On the one hand, sure, feel bad for Don Lemon. I can't think of anyone in the business who has been sort of like whipped around to so many different spots and given promises that and then been let go. On the other hand, he's sort of been the beneficiary of all this sort of like stupidity in media recently by getting kicked out of CNN after being sort of like moved to a new morning show. He walks out with something to the tune of ballpark $20 million. Dollars.
We're going to get to the salary issue.
We're going to get to the salaries.
Yeah, but let's just talk about what happened here.
But then by getting kicked out by Elon, he also walks away with more money. And it's like, and at least the reputation of having at least been one of the few interviewers in recent memory. The other one is probably Andrew Ross Sorkin, who actually got an interview with Elon and asked him reasonable questions. And look, what happened here is, I've gone back, I've watched the interview again. I think the impression I get watching that interview and from some people I've talked to, both in sort of Don Lemon's orbit and then a little bit in Elon's orbit, is I think Elon came to the conclusion, maybe actually like during the course of the interview, that he didn't like being in business with a traditional mainstream media journalist. I think it probably dawned on him in that moment. I think initially he wanted to get Don Lemon's name on there so that Linda Yaccarino could go out at CES and announce like these new deals that they had with content creators who are going to come and create shows.
He didn't want it to just be Tucker Carlson and the sort of right-wing cesspool. He wanted to show that X is for everyone.
X is for everyone. And it's a more compelling story for potential advertisers who, let's say, like, you know, who Linda Yaccarino is desperately going after. If you can go out there and say, look, we don't just have Tucker, we have Don Lemon, we've got Jim Rome, we've got Tulsi Gabbard, and anyone else who wants to come have a show here, come have a show here. But I think it seems to me like what dawned on Elon during the course of being forced to answer questions about his ketamine use, his relationship with Donald Trump, the sort of anti-Semitic tweets, toxicity on the platform, what have you, is he's like, wait a second, I don't like this kind of journalism. I don't like it generally. I don't like being on the receiving end of it. I don't really want to do this. Why am I doing this? And so leaves the interview at Tesla headquarters on Friday, and then by Saturday night has sort of sent a letter to Don Lemon's agent saying contract is canceled.
I thought it was a text.
Text. It is.
That's even funnier.
yeah, well, right. But unfortunately, that is just sort of the world we live in by virtue of Elon's ownership of X, is that he can just do that, right? And we'll get into the salaries, but my understanding...
Well, he can't just do that if there was a contract. He has to pay him out.
No, he will. I believe he will, despite whatever protest he's putting up.
Yeah.
But what I do mean is that it's sort of like all of the usual hand-wringing that previous media companies go through. Like, you look at the way that CNN handled Don Lemon, right? When Chris Licht took over. You don't want him in prime time. Some people kind of want him off the network, but you also recognize that he's sort of a brand name, sort of star talent. And so you've come up with this cockamamie plan to move him to mornings with people he shouldn't be sitting on set with. And then you have to fire him, and then you have to pay him $20 million. Elon is just like, no, I decided I don't like this, and because I don't like it, I'm going to cancel the contract.
Right.
And they will either go to court or not go to court to figure out whether or not he's due something to the tune of $2 million. But that is Elon's world, and he does get to call the shots, and it does presumably make life harder for Linda Yaccarino in terms of trying to bring in advertising revenue. But it is nevertheless what he can do because he is Elon.
Well, it gets to the larger question that I wanted to get into today, which is the life after cable news for a lot of these big star anchors. And this is not a new issue. You know, we've known for years that the plight of the Fox News anchor when they leave Fox News is very difficult. We've seen these one after another anchors like Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck struggle to replicate the fandom that they've had on that platform. But it's changing. Because as the media universe diversifies and fractures and the audience for these cable news networks declines and gets older, I feel like there are more opportunities for these, in your word that you love, defenestrated cable news anchors to find life after that platform. And we've seen it with Megyn Kelly. We're kind of seeing it with Tucker. It's not quite the same. You don't have that nightly perch to preach to your fans, and they have to find you, and sometimes they have to pay for you. But is it different now? Is there the ability to stay a TV news star post-TV?
Well, look, I think it certainly depends on the talent. And then there are various ways you can go at this. And I think the key difference here is the difference between are you standing up a business, or are you doing what one veteran media executive once referred to as busking on the internet? And well, look, it's hard, right? Because, okay, so you take Megyn Kelly. And she's gone out and she's done her own thing, but she also has a Sirius XM contract. And so that, my assumption would be that a lot of her revenue is coming from that contract. Then you have guys like Bill O'Reilly who go up and just sort of stand up something on their own, but don't really put a whole lot of heft behind it. Then you've got Tucker who is starting his own media company, but still has a sort of ad revenue sharing deal with Elon Musk. It just seems like there are a lot of different ways that people are sort of like trying to figure this out that fall short of actually really standing up a business in the sort of like Bill Simmons sense, right?
Right.
Or doing something where they go out and they basically have a lot of different things that they're doing, like Kara Swisher, right? Where you've got like multiple podcasts and you're writing for people and you're doing all these different things.
Yeah, then you go the Piers Morgan route. You reported in your Puck newsletter that Piers Morgan is making $500,000 a month on YouTube.
That was what one person threw to me who had
$500,000 a month on YouTube. That is $6 million a year on YouTube for Piers Morgan.
Right. And so I mean, I guess like let's pull out a little further than the news business for a second and look at guys like, you know, I don't know, you know, you probably know about these folks better than I do, but like the Mr. Beasts of the world,
yeah, but that,
right?
those are native creators. The YouTube influencer, that's a huge business. But I'm wondering if the cable news star has a business as an influencer.
Well, but this is why the distinction you're making between native and the cable news person is important, because I think there are a lot of these cable news people who are so used to bringing one thing to the table, right? They bring themselves, their ability to get on camera, be at least quasi-compelling, quasi-decent to look at, capable of, in a crisis moment, of handling things and getting through the hour or
it
moderating
a tense
conversation.
I don't want to diminish it.
It is 100% a talent, but it is not the same comprehensive understanding of how the internet works, how you build a business, how you build loyalty and engagement on the internet. And so they're bringing sort of a world in which the executives and the producers and the bookers used to handle these things for them. And now they're like, can I do this on my own? And can I stand up a business or something on my own? And what does that mean? Do I need a business partner? Do I need someone who's going to pay people to do what the cable news infrastructure used to do for me? And then if you look at people who are making like, based off of surveying quite a few people, my best guess for what Megyn Kelly is making right now is somewhere to the tune of like $4 to $5 million a year.
And what was she making at Fox?
Well, when she was at NBC, I mean, I think what was then? It was somewhere in the...
Oh, yeah. She left Fox for NBC 15, and it was insane.
15 million or 20. Yeah. So, and at Fox, I would guess probably high, you know, 7, 8 million, 10 million maybe. But so then you know, now it's like it's on her to sort of pay the people who are under her, right? It's not on the parent company. So I think when we think about these salaries, and again, the people's understanding of what these salaries are sort of all over the map. And they're, like we said, there are all sorts of different kind of revenue models and ways to get at this. But then you have to remember that the overhead costs now, right? So I think the thing to try and figure out is if there's a ceiling on a Megyn Kelly or a Don Lemon going out there and they can maybe make, let's call it $5-6 million a year. Then you start to factor in the overhead costs. Then you're thinking, well, they're making, okay, maybe they're making $3 or $4 million a year. It just becomes, for somebody who is used to all of the salaries and the benefits that cable news afforded 10, 15, 20 years ago, it is a significantly smaller, diminished lifestyle than the one you used to enjoy.
But it is a lifestyle. I mean, it used to
for
be
sure.
If you
for sure.
if you left your perch in TV news, you were in Siberia. You were irrelevant. There was no connection to your audience. There were no options. There was kind of nothing you could do. Maybe local.
Yeah, no, that's one. That's right.
Like, it just, there was no platform for you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
I mean, it basically suggests there are two issues here. There's the money issue, trying to replicate what you made when you were on TV. And I don't think these talents are getting there. But there's also the relevance issue. And that's, I think, a little bit dicier. Because you can talk about podcast downloads and you can talk about views on X, whatever that means in Elon's mind these days. But there's still nothing like the perch of television for that narcissistic, ego-driven broadcast news talent to say, I am on CNN every night at 10 p.m. and you can watch me there. And the ratings the next day show that 1 million, 2 million people watched me on CNN, and that is prestigious, and that is my audience. Not to mention the fact that CNN-branded videos go viral. They live on CNN.com. They go everywhere else. You get invited to the conferences. You get everything else associated with the CNN premature, and
right.
That goes away. So I think the relevance of working in digital media for these stars is perhaps even the bigger issue.
I think that's 100% right. And there's this sort of psychological thing.
But should it be?
Well,
should it
yeah,
be? But arguably, I mean, your reach is bigger.
Right. This is what's so strange about this moment,
these
right?
numbers of cable news are insane. The fact that, you know, the median age of MSNBC audiences is 71. 71. Half the people who watch MSNBC are over the age of 71.
That's right. So, I mean, here's what's so batshit crazy, right? So there's this imbalance. The reach on social, the reach on going out there and standing up your own thing, YouTube, whatever it might be, is potentially far more massive than the audience that is going to tune in for cable news on any given Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever. At the same time, to your point about the median age, the vast majority of these audiences are in their 60s, 70s, whatever, and which affects the advertising calculus massively.
Mm-hmm.
And so the actual audience you're looking at, you know, on CNN any given night that is below the age of 55 is somewhere around 100,000 people, right? Anyone with a social media, anyone with sort of like influencer status in the world of social media would look at those numbers and laugh.
I send tweets with more engagement than that.
Yes. And yet, to your point, this is still the thing that it is the forum that confers power and influence in the world of politics. If you want to talk about business, you still it for CNBC. That's still a very meaningful venue. It has executives and producers and makeup artists and town cars that are all making you feel like you are really, really special. The sort of broader narrative about the news cycle still sort of revolves around those venues. And so, yes, I think on the one hand, you could come to someone like Megyn Kelly or Don Lemon, you could say, look, your numbers are higher, you're getting more reach. And at the same time, I think they would think, man, wouldn't it be great to get back inside the building?
Is that the goal? Is that the goal for all these guys, to get that perch again?
I don't know. You know, I don't think so. I think it's just hard to know what the goal is, because I think at the same time that they're simultaneously, they're smart enough and plugged in enough to be aware of the decline that is happening. Let's take Don Lemon. If he's got 2 hours during the first Trump presidency at a time when CNN ratings and revenues are at all-time highs, and he's part of the same network that is like, you know, Anderson Cooper and Wolf Blitzer and all that, that's a great place to be. But if he's coming back to a network where the primetime lineup is like Caitlin Collins into Abby Phillip, you know, into Laura Coates, and the numbers that they're doing in those hours are the numbers that the network used to do at like 3 a.m., then what would you really want to be coming back to? And at the same time, like, don't forget, Matt, all of these networks, even Fox, despite all its success, these guys are all headed for more cuts, and they're going to be salary cuts too. And the world in which, just in the same way that at ABC, the like Good Morning America talent, where you've got each person making like $15 or $20 million a year, that's going to have to stop. The people now who are, you know, you used to be a primetime host, you can make $6, $7, $8 million a year. Now that's coming down to like $3 or $4 million a year. And pretty soon, I think, you know, if you're Mark Thompson, the CEO of CNN, and you're sitting there, you're thinking, all right, how much do I really need to pay someone to put on makeup and read a teleprompter?
Well, it's more than that, but I get the point. And I don't understand why anyone at CNN makes more than a couple million dollars. I mean, I know some of these guys are brands, Anderson Cooper, Jake Tapper. These are news brands and people tune in for them. But the numbers just aren't there anymore. So, like, what is an Anderson Cooper making? I mean, there's been some reporting out there about how he's making $20 million a year. That has always seemed like
bullshit.
Not.
No, 20 is too high. I think Anderson, my understanding, and I haven't checked in a few months, my understanding is that Anderson might be the sole anchor there who is making north of $10
million. Mm-hmm.
I think everyone else, Tapper, Wolf, et cetera, despite what you read, somewhere I read the rap or someone said Wolf was making like $15 million.
Do not believe the rap.
No.
And that got picked up. I was like, oh my God, that's insane.
He's not.
But these are not nothing. I mean, these are elevated salaries.
These are elevated salaries. And look,
from an era that doesn't really justify itself anymore.
Exactly. Now, in order to sustain what remains of like the CNN brand halo, do you need to like, you want to keep Jake Tapper in there, sure. You want to keep Anderson Cooper in there, sure. But don't forget, like, Mark Thompson is a guy who spent 20 years at the BBC. At the BBC, they pay that talent less than $1 million, the equivalent of $1 million a year, like hundreds of thousands of dollars to go on there and read the news. And they come up with like a pretty decent product. So are more people going to be looking at those salaries outside of like the Tappers and the Andersons? I think that's probably going to be the case.
Yeah. So ultimately, isn't it smarter for someone like Tucker Carlson or Don Lemon to go after this younger audience where they are? And where they are is not on cable news. Where they are is on social media and TikTok and other places like that. Ultimately, isn't that going to be better and more lucrative for their personal brands in the long term?
Yes, if they can make it work. I mean, I think it's telling that all of these people that we're talking about, none of them arrived there by their own volition, right? They arrived at this moment because they were defenestrated. And perhaps that was a blessing in disguise. But are they going to be able to carve out a meaningful niche in a world where you do have so many sort of like native digital influencers, social influencers, whatever, who are building much, much bigger businesses? You know, Tucker being like sort of like skewing to the like swamps of the far right, you know, maybe that's a sustainable business.
Well, but he's also able to do other things. Like he has like the Nelk Boys podcast, and like that's very popular with young people. And then all of a sudden, those people know who Tucker Carlson is. Whereas, you know, Craig doesn't watch any of this stuff. Craig doesn't really even know who Tucker Carlson is. I mean, he knows, but like he's not familiar with him from Fox News. Like, no young people interact with that. You gotta go where people are.
Yeah, no, you do. You know, actually, this is, I have never thought about this. I remember learning when I was a kid that like one thing that boosted Tom Petty's career was that he embraced music videos.
Right.
You know, at a time when some of his contemporaries weren't.
Sure.
And I do think there's a thing where like Tucker can meaningfully expand his audience and he can meaningfully find a new business. Even if, like Megyn Kelly, like Don Lemon, had he not been forced out the door of traditional media, he probably never would have done it. But yes, it could be bigger and better for him. The people that I actually do worry about are the people who are not fringe, who are not heavily partisan, who are not crazy. I mean,
down the middle on the internet is not great.
Is not great. But one of my sort of sources of fascination with Don Lemon on this front is he's a guy who has sort of made a name for himself saying some sort of controversial things at times and being, you know, having like what Jeff Zucker and Chris Licht both once referred to as like lightning. And can you be interesting and still be sort of within the bounds of respectable mainstream media on the internet? That's going to actually be a very interesting question. And whether he succeeds or fails on that front might be a litmus test for how others can do.
And ultimately, the performance metrics for the internet are very different than they are for a cable news environment. I mean, with the stuff that Megyn Kelly's doing, just trolling people and throwing bombshells and things like that, that works. Yeah. That's very good for digital environments. Less good when you are in a primetime show at 9 o'clock at night, although at Fox, they had their chance to do that. But if Don Lemon ultimately can't perform up to the standard that the internet demands, the internet will let him know that and the numbers will show that. And
yeah,
maybe in a way that like you wouldn't see on CNN because of a lead-in or because of a news event or because of other things that bring people to CNN.
That's right. He will succeed or fail based solely on himself. He will not have the infrastructure and the imprimatur and the brand halo of CNN to help him in that regard.
He just needs to talk about aliens and conspiracy theories all the time.
missing airlines.
Yeah. All right. Dylan, thanks for coming on. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Greg, March Madness. You ready?
Best sporting event of the year. Can't wait.
How many brackets have you done?
I only do one. I only believe in one. Yeah.
Interesting. Does The Ringer have a pool that I don't know about?
Yeah. Usually we do a pool every year. I should probably check in on that.
I have not filled out my bracket.
You got to wait. You have to wait till Wednesday night because there's the first four games take place Tuesday and Wednesday. And then once those are completed, then you kind of know the official 64 and then you make your bracket.
Great. My procrastination will be rewarded.
Yeah.
So March Madness is interesting this year because there's this wild card of Caitlin Clark, the Iowa women's basketball star who's playing in her last March Madness. And the ratings for her games in particular, and women's basketball in general, have been really strong this year. It's a growth area. And when she played LSU, there was like tons of interest in that. I'm going to go ahead and say it. If Caitlin Clark is in the Final Four for women's, I think the ratings for women's Final Four will be bigger than the men's Final Four. That is my prediction today.
So it's funny because last year the men's Final Four had kind of a random collection of teams. It was a lot of like 4 and 5 seeds, including my
including your team.
That's right. Who went to the national championship?
You got to remind SDSU did go to the national championship, but they didn't win. But they did go.
Okay, still not bad.
No, better than my team, which did not make the tournament again this year.
Poor Cal.
Yeah.
But so I think last year women's Final Four it was 6.5 million viewers, and the men's was 12. So you'd be predicting a pretty large jump here.
I would be, yes, because I think it'll be a phenomenon. It'll be one of those things that, you know, gains momentum over the tournament and, you know, grows and grows and grows. It'll be close, I think, but I think it's possible that if she is in the championship game, it could beat the men's. Now, there's another factor, too. The women's tournament is on ESPN, a channel that most people know and go to a lot. Typically, or most years, the men's Final Four is on CBS. But in this most recent TV deal, they switch off, and this is a TBS year. So the men's Final Four is going to be on TBS, not CBS, which I think does ding it a little bit in casual viewers.
And then it also just comes down to the teams playing. You know, if it's North Carolina versus Arizona, larger markets, like, it'll be a great game. If it's smaller markets, you never know.
Right. The other wild card here is that the games will be available on Max. And Max was supposed to have transitioned their Bleacher Report, whatever they call it, sports service on Max to a additional charge by now, but they didn't get their act together and it's still free. So if you are a Max subscriber, you can watch the TBS and in the earlier rounds, True TV games on your Max service.
Yeah, I actually did that last night. I watched the first four game, Virginia, Colorado State, I watched on Max on True TV and it was great. I love watching sports on streaming. It's so easy and simple.
Really? It's like you get a thrill. You're like, I'm watching sports on the internet.
Yeah, you click Max, it pops up. It's like Virginia, Colorado State, watch live. And I'm like, oh, this is beautiful.
They're really plugging it to me. But like, I have cable. So like, I just flip over to cable and flip around and watch there. So. Yeah.
You know what? It's honestly too hard to find what channel True TV is on Spectrum. I'd rather just go to Max, even if I had cable.
I get it. Yeah, that makes sense. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it's a tough prediction, but I think it has a chance.
Oh, I think so too. And I think Caitlin Clark and Iowa are much more likely to make it to the Final Four.
Oh, you think so? Most brackets I've seen don't have them making it.
I would bet on it. But, you know, no one's bracket is perfect. It's certainly not mine.
No, yours or Barack Obama.
Yeah, you can DM me for my sleeper picks. I have a few.
Oh, you do? Okay, see, I need that. Puck is doing one, and I haven't participated in the past couple of years.
Yeah. I'll shoot you some Cinderella picks for the first few rounds.
All right, we have a sports guy now, John Aron, so a lot of pressure on him to win our bracket. But yeah, we'll see. All right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Dylan Byers. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez, and I want to thank you. We'll see you one more time this week.